The Shortcode Podcast is a proud member of the MedEd Media Network. Inspiration, information, and guidance on your journey to medical school and beyond at mededmedia.com.
Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Shortcode Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues, and interviews
by students for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcode.com.
Welcome back to the Shortcode Podcast, a production of the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. I'm Dave Etler. With me today, my lovely and talented co-hosts. Say hello to MD PhD student Aline Sanduk.
Hey, all of you.
M1 AJ Chowdhury is here.
Hey, hey.
We've got M1 Alex Belzer.
Hello.
And joining us for the first time, Rick Gardner. Rick, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you. What's up, party people?
Oh, that's a little shout out. It's a little shout out, isn't it?
We have not been known to party.
It's a good time to have fun. And we're after that last exam.
Yeah. Where did you come to med school from?
I went to med school at Iowa State University.
Ooh.
You gotta chill it with that, man.
Hey, only the realest news and the hottest takes.
Is this a bone of contention that I'm sensing?
All I'm saying is Iowa State's ranked higher in the college football playoffs rankings, so.
Oh, okay. All right.
Aren't you a basketball school?
We were, but we don't need to remember that right now.
All right. I think I know what this is all about. This is a sports thing, which I don't understand. Traditionally, that's not where my interests lie. But, you know, to each his or her own, if you want to sports it up, who am I to judge?
We need someone in the corner going like, oh, he did not just say that. We don't have one.
No,
so
we don't
I
have one.
Decided
of those.
To be that for a second. It wasn't good.
Thank but. You. I will. I will get a sound effects app for that sort of thing for the future.
We need that app that when you tap it, it makes that like that rap horn sign.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sound of like wah 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 wah.
or fart sounds.
I might actually have that on my phone.
By the when this show comes out, the day the show comes out, it will be Christmas Eve. So if that's what you celebrate, Merry Xmas. If you celebrate another holiday, merry or happy that. May your piñatas or your fireworks or your latkes or your family feasts or your year of the ox bring you great joy in 2021. Let's try to make it that far by staying clear of ill-considered family gatherings, wearing appropriate face coverings, and just being awesome and full of empathy and love for your fellow human beings. That would be nice.
Most definitely.
Of course, the big news for us this week here at the University of Iowa was the beginning of vaccinations against COVID-19. I don't know about you, but I was thoroughly taken in by the joy that is vaccination. Did you guys have feels at all?
Reminiscing a little bit and, you know, where we've come from. You know, I worked in a hospital at the beginning of this and just seeing the change, you know, we've been through the exposition, we've, you know, hit the climax and it feels like we're rounding that curve and we've had a little bit of that light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah, absolutely. That's what I felt. You know, like they sent out like the vaccines, you know, started arriving in trucks and whatever. And, you know, the university started posting about it. And then they sent out this survey. Or this form to employees saying, you know, give us your, you know, let us know that you're going to get this vaccine, please. And so I filled it out and then I got a little misty eyed, a little tear. So it was very exciting. I know that, you know, it's a ways off for me. I'm not so sickly that I will be among the first. And I think it's all hospital people right now, right? It's all healthcare people. Mm-hmm. But I'm looking forward to it.
I'm also looking forward to it. It's going to be a good time.
It's nice knowing that there's finally some sort of concrete ending. Well, hopefully a concrete ending in the near future.
Well, yes, I too would like to not die.
Yeah, it would be swell. I would not like to be permanently or I would like to be not be permanently semi-sick or experience what other people I know have experienced. So this is going to be great. I would like to be able to go on vacation next summer. I would like to be able to do some things that I used to do And I would like to be like, I took a vacation. I actually took a vacation last 2 weeks. As I said before, I took vacation, and because I had nothing to do on my vacation, I actually stopped sleeping. I think my body was like, you don't need any sleep anymore. So basically I did need to sleep, and it was kind of awful. So I would not sleep at night. I would sleep during the day. I would not sleep at night. I would sleep during the day. And then immediately when I came back to work, I started sleeping again. But that's not the kind of vacation I want. I want fun vacation.
Your body knew that you had nothing to rest from or for.
Yes.
Therefore.
Yes.
Why sleep?
Exactly. So I do look forward to all that. One thing I don't know what to make of is a report from Reuters that the global process to deliver COVID-19 vaccines to poorer countries faces, quote, a very high risk failure. The program is called COVAX, and its job is to deliver 2 billion doses by the end of 2021, I guess, of the most vulnerable, you know, to the most vulnerable people, vulnerable, there's a word, the most vulnerable people in countries like Africa, Asia, Latin America. But the program is struggling from supply chain risks and lack of funding. You know, because who pulled out of the WHO in 2020? The United States of America, which you're funding because of Donald Trump and his America First policies. And the U.S. was the largest contributor to WHO funding. So I'm not too pleased about that. It could take maybe 3 or 4 years, they're worried. So I don't know. I don't much like that.
I know I had read a news report that I think it was Australia or New Zealand was going to help support the other Pacific Island nations in its vicinity to help support them in their vaccinations by using their own supply, which is kind of a nice thing to hear about.
Yeah, that sort of feels like the right thing to do. I mean, first of all, we're a rich country. We're benefiting from our richness by being among the first to get the vaccine. In fact, the first, except maybe, I don't know, Britain. And it seems to me that as a matter of public health, global health, we should be, you know, contributing to the health of the world. I don't know. It's just a thought.
Yeah, I think now more than ever, it's so apparent how much the health of people thousands of miles away does directly affect us given the right circumstances. So it's not just the moral and ethical thing to do. Even from a cold and calculating standpoint, it makes sense. We're investing in our own protection when we, you know, contribute to these causes. So it's not a hard argument to make, but I can understand that numbers matter.
But it's an argument that, I mean, people don't seem to get. Right. I mean, surely it's not just, you know, the Trump administration who feels this way. It's like, oh, we need our vaccines. And what they fail to, and this is a theme that I've seen throughout the pandemic, right? What they fail to realize is that the virus doesn't affect just you. It affects everybody. And then that affects you. There's a chain, right? And you can't just focus on yourself. You have to focus on everybody. And whether you're talking about masks, whether you're talking about vaccinations, whether you're talking about, and it's far beyond that. It goes to all kinds of public health issues. You cannot just focus on yourself, because these diseases, these conditions that other people live under also affect us. It affects everybody.
So is the issue that there's just not enough people investing into the program to fund it to make sure that it works?
Yeah. So my understanding is that this program is set up such that it's funded obviously by donations. And if, you know, they've made agreements with, you know, vaccine producers, vaccine manufacturers, but those agreements are based on the ability to pay, obviously. And if we can't pay, then those agreements are null and void. So there's that. But then of course there's also the inevitable supply chain problems, which may or may not happen. But I think at the bottom of it all, you need dough, you need money. And if the U.S. isn't doing what they should be doing, and China actually is also another one that isn't providing any funding, then, you know, there ain't no vaccine, which means that there's a stable reservoir of virus circulating in other countries.
You know who they should talk to right now is Mackenzie Scott. Have you guys heard this story?
No.
So Mackenzie Scott is the ex-wife of Jeff Bezos, and they were divorced a couple of years ago, and she more or less got half his fortune, which makes sense. They'd been together for a very long time. Like, they were together before, you know, they had any money. So it was a meaningful, like, split of assets, right? She didn't just, like, marry a rich guy and then plan to divorce him.
As I plan to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, look, you're not going to find it here. You need to get yourself out there.
Oh.
Where the rich people are.
I keep waiting for a rich lady to knock on, or a man.
To knock on my door and
say, hey, you're the one.
Yeah. Well, so Mackenzie Scott has been, like, over the last couple months, I think because of a pledge made in 2019, has been just giving away just, I think, $4 billion in total to just a variety of organizations. She actually just gave $10 million to Planned Parenthood of the Heartland here in Iowa City. Which
really?
Yeah, it's a big deal. So I think in total, there were like 400 or some organizations, nonprofits, educational institutions that she has been giving her fortune away to, which is, I it does make me wonder what she's getting out of it. You know, if she's not just doing it out of the goodness of her heart, but by all measures, it seems like she's just doing it out of the goodness of her heart. So well, we should call her. So who should get her number and then be like, look, we need a lot, and we've heard you have a lot. Can you give us some?
Yeah, and
maybe she will.
And while we're at it, I mean, surely Bezos wants to one-up his ex. And
hitting them against each other, I love it.
Yeah, we got to start being creative about these funding problems.
We could, I mean, instead of pitting them against each other, we could just tax them.
You know? I think blackmail is probably a better way to go about this.
Alex over here with the old fashioned approach of like, just take it according to the law.
Do a little bit of rogue taxation. I don't know. Somebody's going to use that as a soundbite.
A little Robin Hooding maybe is warranted. You know what's a funny story actually between Jeff Bezos and Mackenzie Scott is Jeff Bezos follows only one person on Instagram, and it's Mackenzie Scott, and she does not follow him back.
Ooh.
A little bit heartbreaking. Like, he may actually still love his wife or his ex-wife, and I don't know the circumstances of their divorce. I think it was just like irreconcilable differences, but yeah.
Maybe he runs one of the biggest tech companies in the world and doesn't know how to use Twitter.
He doesn't have to. He pays someone more money than all of us combined to run his Twitter for him, probably. But yeah, interesting people.
I want to get rich enough to have somebody to run my Twitter. I mean, I don't care about Twitter, but if I'm that rich, I mean, first of all, I would give away a significant portion of my money to vaccinate the world. I mean, I guess I have to now that I've been bitching about it. But second goal would be to have somebody to run my Twitter. Not because I feel like that's important or I care about that, but just so I can say, I have somebody to run my Twitter. I have somebody to express my thoughts. We could have a meeting like every morning to talk about the things that I give a shit about that day.
That would be a pretty
like
big
a scrum.
Course.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. A morning scrum to discuss what I care about, and then they would go off and they would tweet things all day long.
So like kind of like this, but 6 more days a week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sort of. If you want to apply for the job, listener, then let me know. I cannot yet pay you, but
we have some pretty cool pins though.
Oh, those are gone. Those have been
retract that statement.
Yeah, those have been used up. Shh. I've got some I do have some stickers though. So, I can pay you in Shortcode Podcast stickers because nobody apparently wants those.
$1,000 a sticker, please.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I was going to say that sounds a lot like what me and AJ do pretty much every morning, except then we just go spout it to our roommates.
I see.
Just shitpost all day.
You guys are now in charge of my Twitter. Congratulations.
Thank you. When does my first sticker come in the mail?
I actually just got on Twitter because I didn't know how it worked. because it sounded too simple of like, yeah, you make an account and then you just write things into this box and it goes out into the world. And then, so I had to look it up on YouTube of like, how does Twitter work? And
wow.
YouTube just brought up an error message and said, you're too old to be on Twitter.
Here's an Ask Jeeves link to that information.
This is making me feel young. I just turned 25, so I'm already feeling old now.
No.
But I remember having a Twitter at some point, and I remember having it around high school.
What did you do with your high school Twitter?
Probably things that should stay deleted.
Have they been deleted? Should I go and look?
Just really, really bad memes.
All right.
Y'all, Dairy Queen is off the chain tonight.
I have this distinct memory of in high school tweeting and thinking it was like genius, like it was gonna pop off. I tweeted in full caps chicken. That was it.
To be fair, Alex's Twitter is pretty fire.
Is it?
Hey,
it's true. Go follow me, Alex the Belzer.
Wow. Okay. Anybody else have anything they want to buzz market for themselves?
You know, back, since we're kind of saying about things that we did poorly on our social media, this one has stayed up. I left this one up because it keeps me humble. In eighth grade, I posted, going to pool, pick up some chicks with an X.
I think I've seen that. I think I stalked you one time and I found that.
So chicks with an X is actually chickens, so.
Yeah, I caught me a fat McChicken on the way home.
This is the danger of media presence, I think, for kids moving forward, is like nothing dies on the internet. No one gets to make the stupid mistakes we made when we were kids, like dumb postings and things like that, which is kind of sad. Like kids have to be dumb. They have to have the opportunity to just be dumb clowns. And then that's how you learn how not to be a dumb clown. So,
yeah, if you're not ashamed of who you were 4 years ago, then the system isn't working.
Man, that's...
Then you haven't grown as a person and you're still the same person, which is bad. Yeah.
Seriously. Yeah, I was just going to mention, like, you know, you have to do stupid things. Like, that's the whole point of being a kid, is to learn, like, hey, that was dumb. Let's not do that again. Like, let's not do stupid stuff on, like, Facebook or whatever. But it reminds me of being the big Cyclone fan I am, you know, Carson King, that whole situation.
Yeah.
And it's just that, you know, someone who's done phenomenal good and then a Des Moines Register reporter, like, completely undermining their entire, like, the whole purpose of what they did.
By going back and finding his old Facebook or whatever, Twitter, MySpace, whatever.
It was some fat BS.
So there was a very interesting backstory behind that. And it reminds me a little bit of like people making fun of the elderly woman who sued McDonald's for the coffee being too hot. And it sounds so stupid, but there was actually like a very serious, like, you know, corporate misdeed behind that. And what it turned out, I think, is that the reporter was just directed to look into the kid and then happened to find this. And it sounded, and I, you know, I don't know the guy, I don't know what was in his heart, but it kind of sounded from the article like he reached out to Carson King basically out of the goodness of his heart to be like, hey, I just wanted to let you know, I was looking into your background because that's my job, because you're famous, we wanted to write a story about you. I happened to see this. Do you want to make a comment about it? Or how would you like me to address it in the article I'm writing about you? And basically Carson King and his people were like, let me think about that and get back to you. And then they scheduled a press release the next morning, like a press conference to address it, and then kind of named the reporter. And I think people jumped to the conclusion that the reporter was going to out him. And I don't think that was necessarily the case, but point stands. I agree that it's, you know, God, if my brain was posted on Twitter the same way every child's brain is posted on Twitter today, I would be unemployable. I'm very unemployed. If my brain now was on Twitter, I would be unemployable. And that's basically what Twitter is. It's people's thoughts as they're conceiving of them in a place where everyone can see. It's like reading someone's mind. So mm-hmm. don't know.
Yeah, it kind of brings into the picture like a bigger ethical debate as technology progresses about like what is privacy? What are we like? I think there's a law or some fundamental goal or something that says that we should have the right to privacy, but I guess it didn't anticipate that everybody knows everything about everyone.
And that people would like volunteer so much of their information more or less unprompted, you know. It's going to be an interesting future. It's going to be an interesting few presidential elections when kids now are in that age range. Well, in 2020, you did not tip your waitress 20%, therefore.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, yeah, I don't know whether to look forward to. Hopefully I'll be too old and addled by then. Hopefully. Fingers crossed. What else is going on this week? You must be very relieved that the semester is over.
The tears are real.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your plans for break? Are you staying right where you are?
Gotta catch up on those Anki reviews.
Rick, I'm gonna get you on the leaderboard.
Yeah, so Dave, one thing we did, so AJ, I, and I think Alex, you might be big on Anki, as that is the correct way to say it. So what we did is we created there's an app you can add to like Anki, and you create like, you get medals for doing a certain number of cards correctly. So I do Halo 5, and so I get like Kill-tacular when I get like my seventh card correctly or whatever. So we got a leaderboard going, and currently I'm in second place to another guy in our class. Yeah, it's another way I got to show up AJ, let him know who's boss.
Wow. Wow, you guys.
He did make it, to be fair. He's been doing it the longest.
It's some motivation to do something that I don't want to do. So if I get like a little award, like it was like I'm playing video games, but I'm cheating.
Isn't that good?
Yeah, usually I'm all about collaboration, not competition. You guys are kind of blowing that off.
We've made our collaboration competitive.
I would say, you know, to highlight the good, you know, to put you, you know, that concept on the pedestal is, you know, we have a collective group of, 25 something people who have all made decks that we share based on lectures, and people contribute and they study off of them. And it's been a really good resource. That's how I study. And it's been super helpful. And just honestly, that's the one question I get asked a lot by people is just the amount of collaboration that we do. And I think our class is phenomenal. As much as I kind of shit talk AJ, you know, and I love everyone here, and we're all having a good time. We're working hard and having fun.
It's a good time.
Do you agree with that, Alex? Do you love these guys?
I do. Very much so. Oh. You can ask AJ more about that after the show if you really want to know.
Wow, the juicy love details. All right.
Well, you do live in the same house.
I'll keep that in mind.
He's like, yeah, I can hear Alex talking right now.
There's more to know, apparently, than just we love each other.
Yeah. Well, that's very sweet. That's very nice. Mm-hmm. You guys, I am certainly a medical educator. I think we know this, right? Sure, the university calls me an administrative services coordinator and thinks it's paying me to do things like set up business processes, pay people, do other very important and exciting things. But like all you millennials, I have a side hustle too. I am a medicine professor. So I think it's high time to give you a pop quiz on outdated medical practices to see if you've been paying attention to your medical history. So for each of the following, grab a piece of paper and a pencil. For each of the following, Aline's like, I did not bring a piece of paper and a pencil into the closet with me.
What is paper? Little do you know.
Do whatever
it's a tag.
Do whatever you write. I mean, do whatever you want, but prepare to answer these questions and prove that you are paying attention to medical history, which is very important. All right, are we ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right. This old treatment for diarrhea, indigestion, jaundice, and rheumatism is probably in your refrigerator right now. Is it A, cabbage, B, ketchup, C, smoked Gouda cheese, or D, moldy Thanksgiving leftovers? Write down your answer. Let me know when you're ready. It's a very important. Oh, wow. That was a pointed pen click there.
Well, I have been
known to pen click.
All right. Who wants to try their answer first?
I'll go with cabbage.
Okay. Yeah.
I was thinking ketchup.
Why?
Yeah,
Why cabbage? Let's start with cabbage. Why cabbage? I mean, you can't just guess at this.
I find it offensive.
All right. And why ketchup, Aline?
I'm thinking of a time in American culinary history when when ketchup was probably like this huge novelty and like the spiciest thing on the market. You know, the same way they thought Coke would cure all your diseases, they'd be like, look at this cool red thing we've got that's not blood. You should put it in your mouth.
Okay.
So I have the same logic there with the Coke. I'm thinking like Dr. Pepper. Like you have the 100-year-old lady. She's like, why are you still alive? I drink one Dr. Pepper a day. I'm like, okay, can't argue with that.
Did you choose ketchup
exactly.
then?
I did, yeah.
Alex, what did you choose?
So I picked ketchup for a much less elegant reason, I suppose. As elegant as Coke is, I guess. But I thought that ketchup, like, so you know how you have like negative charges, and if you have two negative charges, I don't know where I was going with that. But
we're
like,
riveted,
okay,
though. We're all watching.
I really
watching
wanted
you.
More about these charges.
I really wanted that to go somewhere. Really, I did.
This is really
maybe
to, like,
maybe it's like if you have a. I don't know. I honestly have no idea where I was going with that. So if you have. If you have ketchup, which is kind of the consistency of diarrhea, and diarrhea, which is kind of the consistency of diarrhea, then you...
this
then
is
maybe if you
sense.
Put them together, if you put them together, they don't have diarrhea anymore.
At what point?
It's like...
So what he's saying, two wrongs make a right, is what Alex
yeah.
is saying.
Exactly. Fighting fire
two
with fire.
Two problems make a solution. Okay.
Exclusively consume a non-Newtonian fluid. To get liquid.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, I will...
Alex listed off all non-Newtonian fluids the other day.
I hopped up into a food chemistry journal to read about non-Newtonian fluids. It was awesome. I felt
nerd.
We were eating dinner.
Were you consuming ketchup?
Well,
I don't think so.
I'll give you the answer. The answer is, in fact, ketchup.
Ooh.
Dr. John Cook Bennett sold ketchup in pill form in the 1830s. So I don't know, that kind of obviates your theory there, Alex. But he was the first person, apparently, to add tomatoes to the condiment. Previous to that, it was made of fish and mushrooms. So by 1850, his ketchup pill empire collapsed due to the proliferation of copycats, as well as the fact that ketchup doesn't cure anything. So,
plagiarism, the oldest crime of all time.
Yeah.
Wait, so is that like the ancestral gene or whatever of ketchup packets? Or were ketchup packets?
Yeah, oh, like the pill in the pill form?
Convergent evolution to the idea of a pill form.
Yeah. That's a good...
I think that people just wanted to take ketchup wherever they went with them without carrying the bottle around.
It's like the like equivalent of like a baby aspirin in your pocket. Like you always got to have one.
Nobody chose smoked Gouda, which I thought would be a delightful medicine.
Well, Gouda is a Dutch cheese, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Like it wouldn't have been in America at that time, I don't think.
Okay.
There wasn't a... I really picked that out of thin air of like, well, you know, there wasn't a big Dutch community in America at that time, therefore that's fine.
It sounded super truthy. I liked it.
Been to Pella?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's true. Pella. Oh. All right. Point retracted.
Yeah.
Point
yeah.
Retracted.
All right.
But I was thinking like, what, like 60 or 65% of people are lactose intolerant. So I don't see how feeding them a bunch of chowder is going to help them.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
That's a
Alex,
good point.
You're Dutch, aren't you?
Yeah. My aant and my grandpa actually live in Gouda. Yeah.
We've
I've been
the
there. It's pretty cool.
Right here.
It's pretty cool. That's actually my favorite type of cheese.
Oh,
I couldn't imagine that it would be medicine. Although, maybe it's my medicine. Just, I don't know.
It could have a laxative
That's
effect.
Sweet.
It's all right.
Could have what?
It could have a laxative effect, I'm thinking. Yeah. All right. Next question. Tuberculosis. Everybody's favorite pre-COVID lung disease. It was once very common, as you know, and doctors did their best at treating it without actually understanding it. One treatment called, I don't know if I'm a plumbage, basically PLOMBAGE, plumbage. Consisted of what? What was plumbage? Write down your answer. Filling the chest cavity with plastic balls, incising the chest wall and lung itself to allow more cleansing air in, blowing briskly cold air into the anus to stimulate deep breathing, or slapping the nape of the neck with a branch to encourage the patient to expel demons.
What were the first two?
Filling the chest cavity with plastic balls or incising the chest wall to allow cleansing air into the body. All right. Anybody want to go first?
No. Well, I didn't choose this. I had the opportunity to go to like the pharmacy museum in New Orleans. I guess like the first like pharmacy. And they touted upon the fact that butt plugs were useful in the treatment of hysteria. And so while I did not pick anything regarding cold air in the butt, I feel like there might be some logic there.
Okay.
I chose incising the chest, though. I just felt like that was a worthwhile point to add.
All right. Thank you for adding that. Aileen, what did you choose?
Plastic balls.
All right.
I'm thinking.
What was your thought process there?
So plumbage, I think. So I think that comes from a French word for plumbing. Okay. So my first thought was like a bronchoalveolar lavage, mm-hmm. but then you didn't mention anything with liquid. So I'm going to go with the plastic. Like they were half there and then they went with the wrong medium to deliver into someone's lungs.
Huh. Yeah. All right. Interesting. Interesting theory. AJ, what'd you put?
I went with incising the chest wall.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Same reasons as Rick?
I guess that was long enough ago that people were still practicing heroic medicine where you bleed the humors and everything. This just sounds right up there.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. What did you put, Alex?
The pragmatist in me said that it was incising the chest wall. However, the theorist in me says that it was cold air anus.
Yeah, okay.
I don't know. I don't see how you would think of that outside of it being the actual answer.
Well, like, look,
how would you put that in the non-answers it actually have happened?
Well, look, you would imagine that having brisk cold air blown into your rectum would cause you to take a deep breath, right? No?
Sure. I'm not speaking from experience. Maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, okay. You're right, Aileen. The answer is plastic balls, filling the chest cavity with plastic balls. The practice was common from 1930s to 1950s. It was meant to collapse the upper lobes of the lungs, which was thought to speed healing. Common materials to fill the pleural space were plastic balls, lucite balls, ping pong balls, rubber sheets, paraffin wax, and gauze. The word plumbage is from the Latin word for lead, which I hope was never actually used for that purpose. But
well, that makes sense because pipes historically were made of lead, right? So plumbing and lead kind of go hand in hand. Yeah. Sorry, Alex, were you say something?
Yeah, I don't even remember how I got here. I think I was taking some spectroscopy class and researching stuff and then got off on a tangent at like 3 a.m. But I ended up on this medical journal from like 1927 or something where they were using lead to treat, I think it was breast cancer.
Mm.
I was like, really?
Yeah.
And they actually like wrote out case reports in it. And it was pretty like morbid. Like, how did you not figure out that this wasn't working?
Yeah.
Yeah. When people got very dumb.
Our 100th patient died, doctor. All right, let's try it again. 100 more times. You know, actually, what I was thinking when Alex said that is recently, I don't know how I got on this page, but I was looking something up on PubMed. And one of the results was an advertisement from like the 30s from an Indian health journal touting the benefits of smoking.
Yeah.
And I was like,
yeah.
PubMed, yeah, is useful, but also has this treasure trove of like medically relevant, you know, publications and things like that, that are really thought provoking. I wish I could find it. And if I can find it, I'll post it on the Facebook group. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. What are they going to look back on? What we do is barbaric, right?
I'll take that bet. I'll take that bet. And I think it's going to be animals and dairy products. I think veganism is the diet of the future.
Well,
I've been saying.
I meant medically, but you know, I take point taken. All right, yeah. Let's try this next question. The écrasure was an instrument used by doctors to do what? A, reach deeply into orifices and grasp foreign objects for removal. Lacerate skin to let out the evil spirits. Loop a wire or a small chain around a hemorrhoid to cut off blood flow and chop it off. Or extract money from stingy insurance companies. Écrasure.
How is it spelled?
E-C-R-A-S-E-U-R. Écrasure. It's a very French word, right?
It means to crush.
Well.
I'm going to just give it away.
Aline broke out. The French knowledge.
It's the only reason it's useful is for moments like this. So
I forgot that you had some background there. Damn it.
People forget I'm foreign, but I very much am. what were the answer choices again?
Reach deeply into orifices to grasp foreign objects. Lacerate the skin to let out evil spirits. Loop a wire or small chain around a hemorrhoid to cut off blood flow and allow it to drop off. Or extract money from stingy insurance companies. Who wants to answer first?
I was going to go with evil spirits. I think I'll stick with it.
Yeah. Is there a particular reason or you just feel
it
like...
It just sounds more fun.
Yeah. That does sound fun. Lacerating skin to let out evil spirits. We don't do enough of that anymore. There needs to be more of that. All right. Alex, what'd you put?
As much as I would like there to be a really cool word for extracting money from stingy insurance companies, I had to go with the wire around the hemorrhoid because I don't know, that sounded kind of smart, even if it might have been a little bit barbaric. It sounded kind of smart.
All right. Aline,
I'm gonna go with the foreign objects.
Okay,
for some reason that's just my gut reflex.
All right. And Rick,
and this one really had me confused. I was like, I don't know, like a sewer, I thought like a connoisseur, that's a person, but we're going like, you know, a technique or a practice. I'm going to go with AJ on this one. I feel like, you know, those pesky demons really need to get out of your blood.
Fair enough. They do. I've been saying that for a while now. No, the answer is loop a wire or small chain around a hemorrhoid to cut off blood flow and allow it to drop off. Now,
okay, that was going to be my next answer.
Yeah. Now, I'm pretty sure you should have gone with your gut instinct there with the French. So let that be.
So I thought hemorrhoid first, like you're crushing the hemorrhoid basically, but. Yeah.
So
that
yeah,
that sounded too technologically advanced for the era we're talking about, honestly.
I'm pretty sure that this description is a bit extra about the hemorrhoid cutting off the blood flow. But since other descriptions I've read say, I mean, because that gives me the impression that, you know, you sort of pull the loop tight and then it just severs it off, right? But in the other descriptions I've read, it says it's used to cut off blood supply prior to removal. So almost like a clamp, which implies an additional procedure instead of just popping the offending bit off. But I'm not really sure. It was also used in castration of animals and things like that. So keep that in mind. What substance did early plastic surgeons use to change the shape of the nose? Was it layers of animal fat, ground up lizard teeth, paraffin wax, or Joe Biden's sputum? He was around because the joke is he was around back then.
He's so old.
Yeah, he's old. He's an old guy. That's the joke.
On Pangea.
That's the joke. Who wants to answer first? This very important medical quiz.
I'll take a stab at it. I was feeling the wax, you know. Some days you don't like your nose with so much of a bump, and then you can push down, and then maybe you just want a bump in your nose, you know.
Okay. All right. AJ?
I'll have to go with wax as well.
Why? Same reason?
Same reason.
Okay. Not very original, are you, AJ?
Usually not. All I can think of is all the stuff we had on our test today.
Oh, dear. Alex?
I went with the animal fat. Just because I don't have a good reason. I just feel like people would rationally think that the animal fat could be useful.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have...
Because they'd rather get it from an animal than, like, Joe.
Than Joe.
Like, rather an animal than a friend.
Yeah.
Is it based on charges at all? Though.
Not this time.
Very nice callback. Very nice.
I feel like I'm just getting heat here from him.
Yeah. Yeah, the answer, did we get everybody? Yeah. The answer is paraffin wax. And I think that you might be envisioning, you know, sort of taking and applying it to the outside of your nose. But in fact, the hot wax was injected into the nose and the resulting mass was then sculpted into a pleasing shape and allowed to harden. It took only 30 seconds, followed inevitably by migration and clumping and then the adoption of a reclusive lifestyle, which if, you know, you were really that ugly in the beginning that you decided injecting hot wax in your face was a good idea, you probably could have just skipped to and avoided the pain of injecting hot wax into your face. So there you go. I think it's still, Walkers. It's still occasionally done today. I did read a more recent article about this in the literature about rehabilitating some woman's face after a paraffin injection. So
not exactly the same, but something I have heard of is like a poor man's nose job is injecting fat from other parts of the body into the bridge of the nose.
Yes.
To make a bump less prominent.
An autologous fat transplant, I guess. Yeah, transplant. Yeah. Transplant, yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty, it's like, I wouldn't normally endorse like an off-brand nose job, but that sounds like a good way to go if you wanted to go off-brand, so.
Yeah, I have it on good authority that that's also done for male enhancement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
All right, final question. Final question. This treatment called osteoodontokeratoprosthesis involves extracting a tooth and using it as what? A, a tiny horn on the forehead. C, C. B, an artificial nipple. C, a device for the restoration of vision. Or D, something to throw at that cute girl in math class.
I get the word. Can you pronounce that again for me?
Osteoodontokeratoprosthesis. Which, and now you're, if that's your word you're using, you know, for your procedure, that's just, you're just showing off. That's a ridiculous word.
Sounds like good PR. Like, look at all these letters in the name. It has to be legit.
Yeah.
What were the options again, Dave?
Aline, how dare you?
I did not study. I wasn't told there would be a quiz today.
That's why it's a pop quiz. You got to shift gears. You got to move directly into that quiz mentality. All right. A tiny horn on the forehead.
Remember? Okay. Yeah.
Tiny horn on the forehead. Device for the restoration of vision. An artificial nipple or something to throw at a cute girl in math class. AJ, what'd you put down?
I went with the forehead horn.
Okay. Fair enough.
I second that.
Fair enough. Tiny horn.
The words just sound like they add up to mean that.
Yeah, yeah. Alex, what was your answer?
I was vibing with the throw at the girl in math class. I really.
Is that something that you would have done?
Yep.
Back then.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, I dated a girl in one of my math classes in undergrad.
Did you throw one of your teeth at her?
We had like the rest of the semester.
Oh, dear.
Yeah.
And says ladies man like throwing teeth at people.
It does demonstrate commitment, I would say, though. You know, like,
it's like a form of promise ring in a way.
All right. And Rick, what did you select as your choice?
I'll go be unoriginal and join AJ over on the horns on the head.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Aline?
I'm gonna go with horns on the head.
No, you're all wrong. It's a device for the restoration of vision. It's used for patients who have had severe corneal injury, like from chemical burns or things like that. And it seems like there's a couple of ways to do this, but basically the tooth is removed along with a little jawbone. It's shaped into a receptacle for a cylinder of plastic, optical plastic. It's then implanted in the cheek to give it a chance to develop a blood supply. And then they take it out later along with some cheek mucosa and sew it onto the eyeball with the tooth lens, resulting in a functional light focusing prosthetic. So that's definitely done today.
That's pretty sick.
Yeah. And I want to know, it's kind of like, this is kind of like the first person to eat lobster. Who thought that this was like the way to go?
I was just thinking that, like, who saw this insect in the sea and goes, I bet that tastes delicious.
Yeah.
I'm going to try it.
I mean, thinking outside the box, props for that. You know?
I was just thinking that, how did that first person sell the idea of like, okay, look, we're going to take out one of your teeth. It's going to hurt like hell, but just stick with me for a sec. Then we're going to grind it down. We're going to put it in your cheek. No, really.
This, yeah.
It's going to make sense at the end. Then you get to the end and it's like, all right, fine. What, did you dream this up? Was it a fever dream?
I would have paid to read those case reports, like at the time, be like, oh yeah, I should put cheeks in or teeth in cheeks. I too.
Imagine just time traveling back to like a 1930s medical conference. And this is what you hear.
1960s, by the way, this was 1960s.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, this goes back to, you know, whoever's point it made that, you know, about the barbaric treatment, like looking back, like some of the things we used to do are just crazy.
And this
maybe
is, as
in a
I said, this
decades,
is still, this is still done today.
The future us will look back at current us and say the same thing.
Yeah. Well, this is
they're already having that attitude about chemo, I think. But like, we're not quite there yet. But I think, you know, with like immunotherapies being on the rise and like much, much more available now than they were a few years ago, a lot of people are like, it's going to be interesting in 50 years when we teach people that like the way we treated cancer was to inject poison into your body.
Yeah. And hope that it didn't kill you.
Yeah. So the whole idea behind like radical breast mastectomies is like, just like, oh, let's just cut it everything. You don't need it. Just, and then we can become more focused and you know, precise, and just like how crazy that was in the past. And like the same thing, just different viewpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. I think someone the other day, I don't know, it was like an online discussion talking about hysterectomies, like total hysterectomies. This idea that like, I mean, obviously, you know, fibroids can be benign, and you can have more serious conditions there that do kind of warrant removal of the entire, but like that's an entire organ system that you're assuming doesn't contribute anything except pregnancy, you know, unless you're of childbearing age. But to just like remove all of the, you're right, it's such an interesting idea that like if a thing is broken, you just take it off, you just remove it. But now we have kind of more targeted, personalized approaches.
We're just going to end up like cyberpunk and like just beginning like transplants of like cyber gear.
I'm not opposed to that, to be honest with you. I look, I've got this body. You know, it functions, but I want it to do more. I want to be able to run fast and crush walnuts with my hands, you know, like really do some pretty heroic stuff. I also want to be able to remember things, you know, so I accept my cyborg future. Absolutely.
Do you all remember the movie Bicentennial Man with Robin Williams?
Vaguely.
It's an old movie. It came out, I think, in either the late 90s or the early 2000s, but it was basically, the plot is that Robin Williams plays this like AI manservant that over the course of a couple hundred years, like the family that he was originally built to serve, like they all end up kind of dying off, and he goes through this kind of philosophical quandary of like, you know, I get to live forever, but everyone I ever care about, I'm going to have to watch grow old and die. So he goes on this quest to replace all of his like mechanical organs with like living people's organs. And at the end of the movie, were any of you going to watch it? Can I just spoil it for you? Okay, probably not. But so at the end of the movie, I think he goes to Congress and is like arguing for a bill for the chance to die. Like he wants the right to die, basically, like to die as a human and not as a robot. So it's like the opposite of what we're talking about now, but it's interesting how like the prospect of living forever kind of makes you appreciate, it makes life worth living a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, I don't want to live forever, because that would be, I mean, how many annoying things would I witness? in such a long lifetime.
Crazy presidential elections we have to live through.
I don't know if I can handle it. I just want to be able to do cool things while I'm in my current lifetime. That's all. Yeah. All right. Well, look, that's our show. Thank you, Aline, Rick, AJ, Alex, for chilling with me today. I appreciate it.
Thanks for hosting the chill show.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
And what kind of shabaroon would I be if I didn't thank you, Shortcoats, for making us a part of your week? If you like what you heard today, subscribe to our show and whatever, wherever fine podcasts are available. I remind you that your questions are important to the show, so send us your questions to theshortcoats@gmail.com. You can leave us a message at 347-SHORT-CT. We'll talk about it on the show. While your podcast app is open, leave us some stars and a review. That would make us very happy because I'd like to let us know if you're doing this podcast thing right. Show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government and ongoing support from the Writing and Humanities program. Our music is by Dr. Vox and Catmosphere. Talk to you in 1 week.